This is Monocle on Design, a show where we unpack everything from architecture and craft to furniture and fashion. I'm Nick Manise. While Milan Design Week might have wrapped up, there was much to see and do, and we felt a reflection on the week that was worthwhile. I'll be joined by Monocle's Ed Stocker and Grace Charlton and a host of top designers and architects over the next 30 minutes. All that and more coming up on Monocle on Design. Hello and welcome to today's show and the second edition of our Milan Design Week special. Given the Salone del Mobile Trade Fair closed on Sunday and the global cast of designers are now boarding flights, this show is more a reflection on the week that was, broadcast from our temporary home and pop-up studio in Milan at the House of Switzerland, which was open to the public over recent days. I'm joined here by Ed Stocker, Monocle's Europe editor. Edward, hello.
Hello, Nick.
And Grace Charlton, Monocle writer and deputy editor of the Salone del Mobile special, our dedicated newspaper.
That was a mouthful.
That was quite a mouthful, but I think I navigated it okay. Grace Charlton, hello.
Hello.
Any thoughts, feelings about the week that was? Is our design craving satiated?
I just think it was a mega year. I think you were also saying this, Grace, as well. It just felt so busy. The crowds, you know, I've lived in Milan since 2020. Salone del Mobile has gone through various iterations. Obviously, we know why. But it just seems like everyone is fully back this year. The queues in the middle of Milan for all these incredible installations.
God, your English, you must have loved that.
Well, I get to skip the queue, right? Because I've got a little press card, so. But yeah, just the access to all these incredible buildings and seeing these amazing installations and having great conversations, of course, here on Monocle Radio, but elsewhere as well. And the fairground buzzing as well. I know, Grace, you were down there.
Got my steps in. It was just so busy. I went last year for the first time and I was sort of really taken by surprise. And everyone said that it was the pre-pandemic levels of visits, which is interesting because there's a lot of talk about whether or not the fair is even relevant anymore. But going there, it definitely is.
Clearly, if we're going by footfall numbers, I mean, you were out and across the city as well, which I guess is where it feels like the fun stuff happens. That's where the big installations are. Any favourites that jumped out at you?
I did like Hermès. I thought it was nice that they got pieces out from the archive. I really liked Time and Style, just a little Japanese tatami exhibition that was down the road from where we are right now. So, yeah, no, lots of good stuff.
And then cocktails, parties, any highlights? Too much time with me and Ed, perhaps?
Many cocktails with the lads.
Wow. We can say that. It's with the boys. You know, it's
I'm teetotal. I don't know what you're talking about.
But I mean, I think that's it. And the reason we always bring them up is because it is really the moment to sort of like catch people, have a decent conversation. Salone del Mobile, which I guess is the trade fair that anchors Milan Design Week, really is the start and end of the design calendar for many people. And I think that's it. It's this amazing chance to come together. I mean, I know you, Grace, you spoke to the designer Sophie Lou Jacobson and a few of her collaborators. Tell us a little bit about that conversation and why we decided to talk to Sophie.
So I spoke to Sophie Lou Jacobson and two of her collaborators this year, Anna Caradoc, who is the founder of the design festival that launched in Paris in October called Contributions. And when I visited Paris that week, it was one of my highlights, so I was really excited to meet her. And also Giulio Nardi, who is the founder of Cose Journal, which is a Milan-based design magazine, which has also recently launched. And they're all collaborating together on the Passaggi exhibition in Milan this week.
Well, let's hear your conversation with them now.
Sophie and I are actually friends. We've been friends for a few years. We've collaborated previously. I met Giulia in Paris at a dinner in the winter, and she had a copy of her magazine at the dinner, and it was the most beautiful thing I had seen in a long time, actually. I always look at magazines for inspiration, and it really struck a chord. And the first issue of Cose was focusing on the table, so objects that exist and that we use around the table. And immediately I thought of Sophie, because so much of her practice focuses on tableware. And I thought, well, maybe there's something to do here.
Sophie, can you tell me a little bit more about DWA Cafe and what you're doing here at Salone?
DWA Cafe is it's Café Populaire. It's a project by DWA Studio and Lambert and Fils, who were presenting some new lighting by Zoe Mowat. They have done for 3 years now a cafe during Salone. So it's a continuation of that project. And this year, I supplied all of the glassware for the cafe, which was really exciting, and they did an incredibly beautiful installation. And it's a really beautiful, pleasant garden where you can go and hang out every day from 3 to 8 and see the lights. And there's also beautiful vessels that are being shown by Pedrali. And then have some nice drinks and glassware, and some of my glassware.
Yeah, I feel like your design often focuses on everyday objects mm-hmm. that you can actually use, and having a cafe is like the perfect setting for it. How's the reception been so far?
I think it's been very good. We've only received positive feedback, and people are really enjoying the environment. And I think it's one of those installations or projects during Salone that are very important, because they offer a sort of respite and place to rest amongst everything else. And that's always, I think, some of the more successful projects.
And can you tell me about Croce? Because you've just relaunched, but you started it a year ago.
Yes, the first issue was launched in November, and was about the table. And Croce is a magazine about object, about the world of object, not strictly linked to design, but more of the emotional sphere and the emotional bond that we create with object. And so the magazine is focused on still life photography, but the aim is to show the soul of object. And so this is the reason why we are so connected with Sophie, because it's not only about functionality, but it's also about personal history and memories and all that you can feel looking and touching an object.
That was Sophie Lou Jacobson, Anna Karaduk, and Julia Nardi.
We'll be right back with more from Milan after this.
Tune in to Monocle on Culture, where we grill our panel of critics to get the inside line on the best in the world of film, music, art, literature, and more.
It's just got this synth section that kind of makes you want to swing through the saloon doors straight to the dance floor.
With industry insiders and the odd bit of reportage too, it's bound to keep the most discerning of culture vultures very well fed.
Why'd You Come In Here Looking Like That is a song that is absolutely going to make you want to put on a pair of tight jeans and go boot scooting, even if it's just in your front room.
Monocle on Culture, premiering Mondays at 20:00 London time, and available thereafter wherever you get your podcasts.
We're still here at the House of Switzerland with Ed and Grace. Ed, we're going to hear one of your interviews next. It's with Suan Khan and Mark Masiello, who you interviewed for the Salone del Mobile special newspaper as well. Tell us a little bit about the project that they collaborated on.
Sure. So Suan Khan is in her 80s. She is the daughter of famed American architect, Estonian-born Louis I. Khan. He died back in 1974, but she has sort of led this passion project over the last 15 years to publish one of his last notebooks. He was always drawing designs and writing people's phone numbers down and basically carrying around these books everywhere he went. And she got left a few of them by her mother and decided that she wanted to bring this to a wider public. So she's been on this sort of crusade. And after all this time, Lars Müller Publishers had brought this book out. So she hopped on a plane from New York City and was in town for a couple of days to launch it here during Design Week. And just fascinating to sort of hear her talk. She was also with Mark Masiello, and he is from Form Portfolios. They're basically a company that works to license the work of architects and designers and bring it to a wider public. So they're actually working on bringing furniture pieces from Louis Khan to a wider public. So we chatted together.
I've always wanted to share this notebook with everyone, because I think it really shows my father's personality in a way, because it's full of his drawings, also notes for lectures, collecting names and addresses at a party, a little drawing of a star. His very poetic nature comes through, and he used this book on and off during the last year of his life. So in researching it and sharing it, I was able to experience the last year of his life in a way I never could when he was alive.
And this was, I believe, quite a serious labor of love, because you've had this notebook, and I believe some others in your possession for a while, but I think it took about 15 years for the original idea for this to be turned into this book that we're seeing now here in Milan.
I've tried on and off for the last 15 years to have it produced, but finally Lars Muller, who is one of the best publishers of books in art and design, finally agreed to do it a year ago. And in a year we published a facsimile as well as a companion volume that tells you what you're looking at and gives a story of the notebook.
I mean, this is a facsimile, as in it's a direct copy of the notebook. There's even, which I only learned last night, Suanne, that there's even a little ink stain on the cover, which is pretty amazing. I'm holding it here in my hand. And you've left the blank pages as they were. And then, of course, there's the second book, which is an essay and also an explanation of the illustrations. Mark, I'm going to bring you in. Maybe you can tell listeners what your involvement in the project is. How do you come into it?
Suanne and Greg, her son, approached my company, Form Portfolios, which I'm the founder of, asking us to help open a new chapter in Louis Kahn's legacy, which most people, it's sort of hidden in plain sight, the fact that he designed furniture and lighting fixtures for his buildings. We go and experience these buildings, and we're all in awe of them. At least I am. Everyone I go to feels like it's a temple. And I feel this spirituality when I'm in a Louis Kahn building. We forget or don't really see, because we see the forest, but we don't necessarily see the trees that comprise the forest. And some of those trees are furniture and lighting. And we are creating it's called the Monumental Modernism Collection of Furniture and Lighting by Louis Kahn, and will be introduced starting next year for the first time ever.
Obviously, we'll start with you, Suanne. Your father passed away quite a while ago now. How do you hope that this book will perhaps restart the conversation? As I was saying earlier, he's still so respected for his work, especially, of course, amongst architects and designers. But how do you hope maybe this book may connect with the new generation and start a new conversation about his work?
This is, in a way, a commemorative publication because he died 50 years ago. That spurred the publication of this, actually, the fact that it's a commemorative moment. And the hope is that this will reach young people. There's a lot of blank pages in there, and I was hoping that young people would get away from the computer and the phone and actually draw some things in there themselves. I'm hoping that it will just show another side of my father, a very human side, because he was a fun guy. He liked to especially connect with young people, and as a teacher, beloved by his students. And I was hoping this would have a new conversation about his legacy and his work.
Mark?
I think it is a window into the mind of somebody that many people admire his work, and now you see his notes and his sketches and his musings, and it's a window that is rare to see.
Maybe we can just talk a little bit more about actually the contents in the book. We did touch upon it earlier, but just, I know you've said a lot before, you know, that your father was always doodling. He always had a notebook in his hand. He never went anywhere without one. And when he wasn't drawing in his notebooks, he was drawing on napkins or newspapers. There's everything in here from phone numbers, aren't there, to doodles, you know, or not even doodles, actually sketches and drawings for projects. I mean, it's a real mix of stuff that maybe helps get us inside his head a bit.
Yes, and this is a private diary. This was never meant to be published or seen by anybody else, really. It's just a diary for himself, in a way. So he has drawings, very, very first drawings of a project in the Roosevelt Memorial in New York, and then the very last drawings that he made of it. And so they're drawings, notes for speeches, where he's really he's collecting his own thoughts on paper in a very architectural way, and almost like poetry. And it's just the way he had a book that he could draw in or put his thoughts in if he wished to. And that's the approach to any kind of notebook that he had.
We talked about sort of this new conversation perhaps that the book's going to have. But obviously, you know, your company together with Suanne is working on these new furniture pieces. that are going to come out in the future. How do you think people are going to react to this? And it's, you know, it's a completely new side, isn't it, to Louis Kahn that many people wouldn't have known about.
I've been a fan of Louis Kahn for forever. And when Suanne approached me, I was in disbelief. This is our business, but I didn't know that Louis Kahn had designed furniture. There's so many fans of Louis Kahn, and his work is so respected. He's arguably one of the greatest architects of the 20th century. And unlike many of the other architects, like Corbusier and Eames and others, there's never been a design of Louis Kahn that one could live with in their home. So I think it will begin new conversations and new discovery and new fans for Louis Kahn going forward.
And that was Suanne Kahn and Mark Masiello in conversation with me about The Last Notebook.
Now, Ed, would you want one of your notebooks published, or is this top secret?
I don't think they're that exciting, Nick, to be honest with you. I don't have, like, lots of amazing drawings in them. So if you want sort of little scribbles about my Monocle to-do list, then sure.
Grace, are you notebook bound?
You'll never find out.
Okay, well, no. You can have my dear diaries anytime. Next on today's show, we're going to hear from Benedetta Tagliabue, who was on the Pritzker Prize jury, I think. So she's a big name in architecture, Grace.
She's a very big deal and exciting for me because I went to university in Edinburgh. She designed the Parliament on Holyrood Road.
So there's a connection instantly there already.
I was a little starstruck, I'm not going to lie.
So let's talk about what she worked on for Milan Design Week in Salone del Mobile.
So she launched a lamp with Artemide in collaboration with an astrophysicist called Cecilia Valdo. It was just so fun to talk to them both separately. I mean, talk about being starstruck, literally. Like, she knows about stars. And she was telling me about the moons of Jupiter and Neptune and how there's like a layer of ice and water trapped inside, and that inspired the lamp.
But no astrology chat.
No astrology. I really held back. I don't think they would have appreciated
it. We had a designer in here the other day and we started talking star signs. It happens. We draw inspiration from all sorts of places, but this was drawing inspiration more from the actual physical forms of stars.
I draw a line at asking an astrophysicist about star signs. I don't know if they would have wanted to bring down the level of intellectualism that much. But no, it was really cool. And the technology that they used to create this lamp is mind-blowing.
So. Amazing. Well, let's hear that conversation with Benedetta Tagliabue now.
I met Cecilia a long time ago, and she started to show me photographs of the space, of planets and stars. The photographs were beautiful. And then I found her again here in Milan, and Carlotta de Bevilacqua, the owner of Artemide, proposed us, why don't you work together? Because I want a lamp from you and a lamp from you. Why don't you do one lamp together? And I felt this was a fantastic occasion because you always need, as an architect, to have an inspiration, someone to listen to, something to give you ideas or desires. And the conversation with Cecilia is never ending. Luckily, we have one product at the end, but I think we will have many, many, many more.
I think you should. It's so beautiful. Could you describe the lamp for people listening? Because there's a lot going on and there's a net in the middle. How would you sort of describe it?
Well, after having gone through all possibilities, space inventions, having investigated in many ways, at the end we realized that the most simple ideas are the most powerful. The idea of space, of planets, of this round things, you can compare them with the games that you have when you're small and you play with your fantasy, with your imagination. So a marble can be a moon, can be a planet, can be Jupiter. You can make the space out of that. And marble is a beautiful element. So we were kind of starting to think in our office how beautiful it would be that a marble is the lamp itself. And so we started like that.
I think it's with space and that design and that world, it really does awake a childlike wonder in everyone. There's a real playfulness to this piece, and that touches maybe a lot of people.
I like very much when things so far away, like the space and the comprehension of the space, which is so difficult, especially with the last theories, become part of our lives. And we can use the imagination to do that. No? For example, it's very lovely to have this game which makes your imagination fly, and this is maybe the first way to understand a little bit of the space. And that's why we thought a game like marble, being a child, understanding the space, they're kind of similar. So let's make a marble which is a lamp, but in the same time is a moon, is a planet, is has water, because we also had all this idea, creates light, which is a magical thing. Oh, that apparently we think light is normal. Light is not normal. Light is something incredible. So we were doing something like that. But also, in this investigation, we had a fantastic invention. We wanted the marble to be the light in itself, but usually it's very difficult. Usually you have sources of light which are kind of recognizable. But, you know, Artemide has a system which is very magic in itself. And it was patented, invented by them, and it's called Discovery. And it's like, let's say, a frame with a transparent something inside. And then when you put the light on, this transparent something becomes the source of light. And it's a very special system. And we asked them, why don't you try to make this flat surface become a complex surface so that we can put it inside our sphere, our ball, our magical ball? And they were kind of, you know, looking at us, and we realized that, no, this is, it must be impossible, because they never answered. But one day they arrived, and the magical thing was working. So we had this flat surface which became very complex and became the center luminous part of this sphere.
Do you think you'll collaborate again? It sounds like you've got many more ideas.
We would love to collaborate again. Let's say, now we are inside a world of Artemide, so also we are inside a kind of a specific proposal for the market. But I think it would be fantastic to propose Artemide, propose Ercilia, to do all these other ideas that we had and we couldn't realize until now. And this makes me very happy.
That was Benedetta Tagliabue talking about her project with Artemide.
And finally, on today's show, we're going to go to a conversation I had with Oki Sato from Nendo.
Tell me, how was it?
It was great. I was actually a little bit starstruck. He's this incredible designer that's built up an amazing portfolio over the last 20 years. I guess he's experimental, he's playful, he's process-driven, but we talked a lot about the inspiration that he finds. He was showing some material experimentations here in Milan that he was basically just doing for pleasure.
Material experimentation.
Yeah, well, you're going to hear about it in this chat, which we are going to throw to right now.
At the moment, I'm working on the Japan pavilion for the Osaka Expo, which will start in 2025. It's huge. It's like 10,000 square meters. We're expecting 2 million visitors. It's going to go on for 6 months, and I have to take care of the architecture, the interiors, whatever's going to happen inside. So it's like almost like taking care of 15 exhibitions during the Salone. So it's a nightmare for me.
It's a big project. But, I mean, how does that sit in a grey zone? Because it's temporary architecture?
But you have to think of it, everything at the same time. It's not like you just build a box and then you start working on the interior. It's not like step by step, but we have to think in parallel. It's super grey at the moment. And we make one change and we have to change the architecture, and then we have to change where we'll exhibit as well. So it's hell, I would say.
Hell, but is it also fun? I mean, you've now been built a practice around it.
It's a great challenge for our studio, and yes, it is our biggest challenge.
Does this push your creativity? Do you think this gray zone, I guess, encourage you to find unexpected solutions? That's sort of what I think of when I think of your work.
I really feel like I'm in this long, long tunnel, and so after I'm out of this tunnel, I think I can find something. There must be something like something that changes my mind, the way I approach the design, and yeah, I'm really excited to see that.
As well, I guess, in terms of projects that you seek out,
right,
are you looking for work that's sitting in this grey zone? Are you developing things on your own, just at the studio and seeing where they go? Like, how much is you being commissioned versus you and your studio experimenting?
We try to do both as much as possible. For instance, the solo exhibition that I'm doing at this moment during the design week is called Whispers of Nature. And this is all about experiments that we do usually in our studio. And we just find new materials or try to work on new ways of designing things or new ways of producing things. And so we selected five of our most recent collections and we are showing them.
I mean, let's talk through a few of them. I've got them. I'm just pulling them up in front of me here. We've got, there's one called Pond Dipping, which is...
That is one of the most craziest.
that's why I picked it. I mean, usually, I'm going to see if I can try and explain it to our listeners. I've got it pulled up here. They're kind of like objects that look like they've been half submerged in, I guess, a black pond. Like, is that it?
Basically, they're like tubes, like cylinders, and then we have white string that is wrapped around the cylinder, and then we dip it into this dye, a black dye, and then we make a textile. So we're not designing the patterns at all. It's just the thickness of the tubes, or the angle of the dipping, or the amount of dipping, and the pattern really changes. It's quite amazing.
And you were doing this in your studio just experimentally? What prompted this? Why do this?
So it's always thinking about what if. So this was one of the what ifs. So it was about what if we don't design textiles, like just printing or using different colors of yarn, but just by the way of dyeing, how could we create new patterns? And then we were quite amazed and we were like shocked to see the new patterns and the different patterns by the way of dipping. And it was something that we did not expect.
It looks gorgeous, but what's your hope from this? Can you implement this on a project? Is this just a beautiful thing, a beautiful experiment?
We feel that this kind of experiment really develops into our future projects, and so we don't really have a goal for this, and maybe it becomes part of our architecture or maybe it becomes part of graphical something, but what is important is that we just continue this kind of experimental things in our studio.
Are there some pillars to your studio or to your work that kind of define everything? It sounds like experimentation is incredibly important to you. Are there, I guess, any other qualities or an ethos that you try to bring to every project?
It's kind of like Japanese food in a way. We try not to add...
Delicious.
Yes, it has to be delicious, yes. And it has to be fresh. So it's almost like sashimi. Like you're just slicing raw fish. But there's a certain technique. It has to be... If you take too much time, it starts to get bad, like, of course. So when you come up with the idea, we have to make it happen as quickly as possible. So the freshness of the idea is important, and we try not to add too much spices, too much sauce or whatever, but so it has to be very minimal and simple. So what I always tell my staff is that the idea has to be something that you can tell your mother on the phone. It has to be that easy. And we feel that these easy ideas, the minimal ideas, they can develop into something big or something different in the future. And that's what I feel is really exciting for myself.
That's amazing. I mean, why simplicity? Why is that key? Is it so that products or your interiors or your architecture is easy to understand?
I think the more simple it is, it's easier to develop. It may develop into different directions. It may branch into different directions. It's always interesting to find a seed rather than a leaf or a flower or a branch. When we find a seed, maybe it's not myself, but someone else may develop it into something else. And I think that's the core value of design itself.
That was Oki Sato of Nendo. And that's all for today's show. Ed Stocker, thanks for hosting us in your home city.
Thank you for being here.
It was a pleasure. And Grace Charlton, thank you for your amazing work in Milan. Where can they buy our Salone del Mobile special newspaper?
On all good newsstands, but also online.
Visit us at monocle.com, where you can find more design stories. You can also listen to our bonus 5-minute midweek show, Monocle on Design Extra, which is out on Thursdays. My thanks to David Stevens, Steph Chungu, and Maylee Evans for their production work on today's show. I'm Nick Manise. Goodbye from Milan, and thanks for listening.